Right now, it's my pleasure to welcome into our studios a musician who we had hoped would be able to come in a little while ago, but wasn't able to happen, but thankfully he's here today, and that's Mike Watt. How you doing, Watt?
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me aboard. They're very appropriate for Thanksgiving and what's been going on this week.
Yeah, thanks.
Great album, man.
Yeah.
My favorite Jimmy.
Well, yeah, certainly my favorite as well. We talked to you earlier in the year. We did this 30th anniversary special for Double Nickels and a Dime, and back then we talked about you coming in again and set things up, but had some problems because you were actually picking up the members of this latest project that you've been working on, Il Sogno del Marinario, for the tour that you just got back from. You're always touring, it seems like.
Especially spring and fall.
Yeah. And yeah, so things, I think, what was it? They, like, got stuck in customs or something along those lines,
immigration,
right?
Immigration, a little slow with the, you know, the thing under the Statue of Liberty, you know, they don't tell you about, it's not so quick. Give me your drummers, your guitar players, but please wait. Scusi.
Yeah, so it is nice to have you in here.
And, yeah, we missed because we were planning on hitting right from LAX over to here.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to talk to the other members because that was really their first time touring the States. But who knows, you know, maybe for the third record that you guys do in the future.
Yeah, Terzo.
But let's a couple of things I do want to talk. I do want to talk about this particular project, Il Sogno del Marinario. And I was wondering, kind of keys into a variety of things I'm always wondering about with you, you know, since the Minutemen up to the present time.
Yeah.
You've always been a really collaborative artist.
Yeah.
And you kind of had your hands and bass in a variety of different places. And I'm always really interested in just how many of those projects get together. So why don't we talk about this particular one and maybe talk about some of the others? But how did you actually hook up with these guys? Both of them are Italian, right?
Yeah. A lot of the way things come together is by accident. Mm. You know, D. Boone jumping out of that tree. This guitar man in this band here was put in a boat with me when I was doing my second opera.
Okay.
The Italian promoter thought we needed a helper man with us for the Italian gigs. So that's how I met him.
Hmm.
Just put in a boat. Then I find out later he also plays and stuff, and he starts sending me music. He's in a band called Three Quarters Had Been Eliminated. That's a band name.
I bet that sounds great in Italian.
And very emotional kind of avant-garde, would you say?
Yeah.
That's the school both these guys are from, Stefano and Andrea. But Stefano gets his offer to play Cesena festival. And he asked me, he says, I got a buddy from Verona who does drums, and we can make a trio. I said, sure. But, you know, one gig? Well, I come over here and we do a few gigs, maybe five or six or something. Okay. And we're going to get stuff together for some gigs. Why don't we record it? This is the way I'm thinking. In the older days, I wouldn't have been thinking that way. But now that's what I'm thinking. So all of a sudden, because, you know, part of it is being a bass. I think it lends itself to being like you're kind of like glue, so you need constantly needing things to stick to.
Yeah,
I think in the older days, producers or something put you together, but the idea of a bass player, we were just talking about Jack Bruce when Jimmy was playing. He's one of the guys who first gave voice, I think, that I could actually hear and put a name to. But what I was feeling was on the radio big time was James Jamerson and the Motown stuff.
Mm.
And I think he's on the most number ones. There's a drummer from England, a session guy, but he's like on like 100 top 20s.
Uh-huh. So
massive. But he was probably, this is who I got to play with today. Where my thing is like, well, what situation can I get in that makes bass interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And, both these guys cook. So yeah, let's go to Italy. Get some good food. Get some guys 20 years younger than me and to avant-garde. I think there's some stuff I can learn. in this situation. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the problems about getting older. You think you've seen it all.
Hmm.
So you need, I think, experiences like this to keep in beginner mode. There's something, too, about the bass, you know. Humans, long, they do something more and more and more. Well, in bass, you get small if you're trying to play too many notes. So it's always this search for the right notes.
Huh.
And somebody who's just playing can write a great bass line because of that, because of the physics. And so that's another thing that keeps me open for situations. So once they happen, you know, however they happen, then I engage just like it was me and D-Bone. Now we're going to have to work on this. We're going to have to compose. We're going to have to find a voice for this ensemble. Whenever you get more than one cat playing, I think you're trying to make an interesting conversation that has got some integrity to it. I mean, we're all born, it seems, with individualism and at the same time bunches of common ground. The arts is the way to try to express that, especially in a collaborative thing, which is, you know, the ensembles. And that's what I'm looking for. And that's what I found with these guys. It was trippy, you know, to think about all that ahead of time. I probably could have never, but because circumstance and situation brought things.
Huh.
And I learned that from the D-Boone, you know, coming out of that tree and his ma saying, okay, you're the bass. I never even picked bass, you know. Yeah. So a lot of my life has been lucky things. But then I found once they get going, you have to work at it,
yeah,
big time. Most of the time, situations don't want you cultivating. Almost like the manure thing.
Yeah.
And so, but maybe that you can buck up on that and get something. The one thing is to keep in learner mode, and that's what it's all about. I would have never guessed that when I was younger. Or more younger.
Yeah.
With D-Boone. Yeah, we're going to graduate school. And there's going to be no more tests. No more learning. And found out that was a ridiculous way of thinking. You know, it's really ridiculous. But it's hard to know when you're young. You know, when the older dudes are trying to relate stuff to you, you don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You almost have to find it out by doing it and stumbling and getting back up. And this is what I found about things. So the situations of musics, what can I do with my bass to reinvent, to make myself feel like, I'm here and I'm not just won the lotto or resting on some whatever, laurel, that, you know, I'm like good tires for the boat.
I would think with a lot of people, especially when they start up a new musical partnership, being in one country and the other players being in another country might be a really frustrating thing. But with you, because you're always working on so many different projects, almost seemingly simultaneously, it almost seems like it might be better because it kind of flows with the rhythm of all the other things that you're doing.
And you know, these days, too, this technology thing.
Mm.
This would have been harder to do in the D-Boone days. You had to be jamming with the guys. Which, I mean, there's nothing like playing on stage with two other guys. But, yeah, getting it together, that's a whole different way than the old days. And not... They're not even in the same land. The drummer man moved to Berlin.
Oh, wow.
So we're in three different countries.
Oh, Jesus.
But when people talk about the bad new days, I mean, there are some good things. And part of it is this technology thing where we can collaborate. But when it gets down to it, it's almost the old vaudeville. You have to get out there. You have to put a gig together. You have to put a set together. We were getting it. Maybe this is rubbing off from my opera thing, but we were playing the set like it was one big song.
Huh.
Yeah, they really... I got to give them a lot of credit, too, because I put myself in their shoes. And I remember me and D-Boone didn't even know anybody 20 years older, let alone playing with them.
Yeah.
Such younger people I give a lot of credit to. They're a lot, I'm not saying light years ahead, but compared to us in the 70s, they're a little more open-minded. And we'll play with the old dude.
Now, that first record kind of seemed to just kind of come together in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
But what about with this second record? How did the ideas for it come about? Part of the way that you were talking about it was because of the technology, it kind of made things a little bit easier to share ideas and share songs and kind of put the final product together. But how did this second record come together with this project?
Yeah, big difference. First, when we knew each other, we did 6 gigs.
Uh-huh.
Was recorded after 3 gigs. So we only knew each other for 3 gigs.
It's like a band of gypsies.
It's like a band of gypsies. Totally. This one here, we actually did that Europe tour. So we had time playing with each other. And then, instead of only 2.5 days to do it, 8 days.
Mm.
And we all spent it together in this farmhouse outside of Bologna. The studio was actually in the barn. And so that was a lot different than the other one. The other baby got recorded and all the basic stuff, and then they added on guests and stuff because it was a couple years before it came out.
Yeah.
I didn't want to put it out till we toured. That's the one thing about schedules, right? Getting them to line up. So it took 3 years before we could tour that thing. So that, in the meantime, this one, no. What we get right here, let's put it out that way. So completely, we're already talking about the third one. We want to do that one different too.
Huh.
These guys, I think maybe coming from the avant-garde, they're not afraid to take chances. It seems that scene is, yeah, it's not a lot about beats. They told me when they first played together, they weren't even on drums and guitar. They were beating on some mattress thing, you know, with the springs and hitting on it with forks and spoons.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty experimental.
Yeah, you know, and you can imagine, you know, here's a guy who grew up on Jack Bruce and James Jamerson. But that shows you the righteous stuff of music, you know. The genre thing is ridiculous. Mm. It's bringing the human experience. And the distance is... brings in an exotic thing, I think, in a way. Like, wow. You know? What's one trippy thing, even though 21 years apart, we still share punk.
Uh-huh.
That's how old punk is.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? Yeah. So in a way, we do have a reference point that's, what do you call it, one of these contemporary movements.
Yeah.
It's actually like 30 or 40 years old now.
Yeah, but it's a shared language now.
It totally, which is a big, big surprise to me. I thought it was some freak out on the fringe. Well, it still is for me. But the way, yeah, some cats in other lands, and they could develop into very serious musicians and stuff and still came from that strange scene with the funny names and haircuts and clothes and wild music. I'm very indebted to the movement still about that. The same thing that allowed Double Nickels, allowed El Señor de Mayanile, yeah, in some ways. And even with Tom and Raul with the third opera, I'm going to do one more time around with that this spring in Europe. All that stuff, made possible by that movement. I mean, I had to put in some effort. The guys I played with, of course, wasn't handed to us, but at least there was the opportunity there, you know? I wonder if any of this stuff would have happened. I would like to say, oh, yeah, musician, you know.
Mm-hmm.
John Coltrane, I remember him saying that they're after some kind of truth. I've always liked that. You know, this tour, I got to go. You know, I've always driven past Hamlet and High Point, you know, when I'm in North Carolina. This time, no, why? You're gonna stop. You know, check it out. His guy showed us the pad he was born in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he worked at a garage across the street. And he took me to the Coltrane room where they had a little thing for him because, you know, this Temple University, I brought one of the tunes where he's singing and beating on his chest. Somebody told me he learned that from the Buddha thing.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, this idea of the music, the musician, I think, you know, I used to always think, wow, this was a movement that let me and D. Boone play. But in another way, I think it's... responsible. Well, D. Boone too. I mean, you know, getting to play with him. And, yeah, where you're really trying to make interesting things. So even though this is a new kind of thing, last couple of years with Andrea and Stefano, my history has something to do with it. Without leaning on it, mm-hmm. without still, when those guys allowing me to be part of the present and be part of a thing that's happening now and not just, you know, the robot Mr. Lincoln at the Disney thing. Was that scary way he looked? And everyone, so cause sometimes I worry about that, you know?
Yeah.
Cats like this want to play with me, want to put together a unit that's going to try to find its own voice and not just do the name game or something like that. Be sincere and enthusiastic. I owe them everything I got.
Yeah, it's a sound that certainly has some connections to, especially the couple of operas that you've been doing and you know some of your previous work, but it also has a little bit of a different sound. Why don't we take a listen to one of the tracks from this record from Il Sogno del Marinario, a group that Mike Watt, who is our guest, is a part of, and see what you guys think about this. This is from the second record, Secondo Canto, right now from Il Sogno del Marinario on KPFK in Melting Pot. Music from Il Sogno del Marinaro from their record Canto Secondo and the song was called Mountaintop. It was a song that was written by the guitarist you were telling me about. Tell me a little bit about what he was telling you, the story behind that song.
Right, Stefano. He was climbing Mount Etna in Sicily. It's a volcano. Mm. And he said, you know, he's climbing up this baby, and kind of epiphany hit him that it was kind of a metaphor for life and death. He said, yeah? He said, yeah, but not so serious. He said, okay.
And you you actually just did a tour with this group. This was really, you know, you're telling us the story of how the band got together. It really were only this a couple handfuls of times you guys played when you put the first record out. Yeah. And then they hadn't really come to the U.S., hadn't played in the U.S., and you guys did something crazy, like 53 dates in 53 days or something along those lines?
Yeah.
And it was a around-the-country tour.
Yeah.
You hit almost everywhere.
In the fall, I go clockwise. In the spring, I go counterclockwise. I got it from vaudeville. I didn't. You know, a lot of this is tradition for me. So, kind of new for them, but the no whining, they were tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, they manned up, grew some balls. No, they're really righteous cats to tour with. And there's nothing like enthusiasm. In this racket, sometimes the entitlement thing, taking it for granted,
mm-hmm.
feeling the pee under 45 mattresses. I used to have a tiara I put on the boat, on the dash, but I wouldn't even have to put it on. You know, I just have to point at it. These guys, no problem. They were, like I was saying before, the O word, opportunity.
Yeah.
Instead of the B word, burden, you know. I remember reading these interviews when I was young, you know. Rock and Rollers, the hell of Torn, you know. And then me and D Boom, we started as a Minuteman. Wow, people pay money for vacations. I guess it's all a perspective, you know. So I'm just lucky. Or maybe that's why they asked me to be part of something. Maybe there's some resonance. There's some about the arts, you know, that go beyond borders and generations, whatever. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I remember first going to Europe. It was Minuteman Black Flag in 82. And it just seemed so different and far away. And so did a lot of the rest of the country.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you find out, again, that's all perception. And you find out, wow, yeah, of course, everything's a little different. That makes it interesting. Then there's still a lot of common ground. So don't get your thing all tied up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we do this even when we're beginning, thinking you got it all figured out. Just let go. Let become the learner, the learning mode, the student mode. Yeah, I like that place. Obviously, with the Stooges, you know, 125 months with them, learning Stooges music and learning how to bring it to gigs. And then you were talking about my operas where I ask people to help me realize these visions.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the true collaborations, which is like El Señor de Mano and Dos. I think I need all these things all come together. Now, what I don't really experiment with is other instruments. I know a little mandolin. I did write third opera on D Boone's guitar, but mainly I stick to the bass. And that trips a lot of people out. Why do you, you know, you've done a little bit on bass. Why do you? Wow, there's just so much to learn on the bass. I can't even go to the fifth string. There was a guy, you know, I was listening to this station, KPFK, the day of his memorial, was driving home from it, Charlie Hayden. And somebody rear-ended me in Los Feliz while he was playing. I think he was doing Don Cherry's Relativity Suite or something.
Oh, yeah.
Jamming. Yeah. Yeah. And, man, the boat didn't even get touched. And the Mercedes hit me, crumpled up front end, not even touched. And I go to the guy, don't worry about it. And he goes, yeah, my fault. I said, okay. Crumpled up. And here Charlie's music is going the whole time. You know, there's something about bass, and I'm gonna stick with it. But bring it into situations. like with the Fratelli, with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to England. Here's something I just got back when I talked to you last time.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the DJs over there, Mr. Mark Riley, Mr. John Kennedy had me over there with the BBC and XFM to do this proj, because some projects I do, there's no gigs. It's just about trading files.
Yeah.
But then, hey, well, they're playing this on the radio. Will you come over and play? I had to go play these songs in person. And now we're going to do a tour with that. So it's called Cuz. Me and a guy named Sam out of Brighton, born in Brighton. I just moved there. Just put it together by doing jams. And then he took little samples, showing me there's a kind of a, what do you call it, a graphical analog with this Pro Tools, where it's not just sounds. You actually, sorry about it, moving blocks of little things around.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wow, this is a different way to make music. It's like baking cookies or something. You know? And so this Cuz Proj, I'm going to go do that next. And then I was telling you the last tour for the Third Opera, I'm going to put it to bed in Central Europe. But then I want to do a Europe tour with these the Italian guys of what we just did. And then probably,
out of that tour, probably record a third record.
Third album, that's it.
Mm. So, I mean, there. Now you got another project, too.
All kinds. You know, in the summer, actually right before I talked to you, I came back from New York City on the way from England.
Yeah, yeah.
With Nels Klein, I did something called Big Walnuts Yonder, and Greg Sarnier from Deerhoof, and Nick Reinhardt from Sacktown. Caramelos, sorry.
It's all right.
Younger guys. And, man, this just came out. He wanted to know who played guitar on the first opera. I said, you want to know him? Play with him. So I called up Nels. Nels said, yeah, bring him. Uh-huh. I mean, that's the way it's gotten with me. You know, if there's just any possibility of not doing a rerun, let's go for it.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe if you got a skateboard and a lot of empty swimming pools. Something like that. That's the way I look at it. I'm not into the rerun. I'm not into, like, same old. But the situations, and, you know, they don't have to even be different instruments. Like this thing with the guitar-based drums.
Yeah.
Man, I've been doing this with all kinds of people.
Yeah.
And they're all different. Look what Jimmy did with Billy and Buddy there.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do. Well, it's just like writing books and stuff. There's only 26 letters.
Hmm.
You don't have to invent new ones to make a good novel. So that's what I'm trying to do. Get down the road with it. I think I've been very lucky. But at the same time, that feeds this other thing about being grateful, that I got to work even harder to earn it.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, just kind of not resting on your laurels, and it does seem like, I mean, there are quite a lot of people, when I think about especially your generation of musicians coming out of 70s and 80s, coming out of punk, there are still a few people who are out there still doing quite a lot of things, but it seems like for a variety of reasons, some people kind of just fell out or just didn't feel the same kind of feelings to making music. But it seems like with you, there's always been this curiosity connected to sound and wanting to, even though, again, playing just a bass, not changing instruments, but kind of adding your voice to these different kind of spaces creates, you know, new possibilities, and that curiosity that seems to really drive you, you know, I think is a really exceptional thing, especially, you know, thinking about musicians over the last, you know, couple generations, and it's one of the many things I really appreciate about the work that you do.
Well, thank you, Michael. It in some ways surprises me, because I got into music very personal, just to play with D Boone.
Yeah,
and then this other thing, what happened to us. But then this other thing where it's like, no, try to learn from everybody or as many you can.
Mm.
Maybe it was a reaction to losing him. But you know, you hear some of it in that double nickels. Obviously, yeah. Remember D. Boone once saying, you know, well, we can play anything we want just as long as we sound like the Minutemen.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever that means. Sure. I'm on board with that, D. Boone.
Yeah.
He said, but you know one thing? I said, what? Your lyrics are too spacey. So that's why there's that landlady note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Said, is this one real? Is this real enough, D. Boone? No, but it's really interesting. You know how you're shaped by your first experiences. But then maybe you kind of react against them, too. I didn't think anyone wanted to hear me play without him. Big surprise to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, big surprise.
Well, again, you know, I think some of it is sound. You know, like Charlie Haden, you have a kind of signature sound, like you know you're playing when you hear it. But I think also likely like Haden, who did tons of collaborations and was really interested to do a variety of different genres, the approach to music, I would imagine, is something also that a lot of musicians find kind of comforting, welcoming in terms of either into the kind of vision for their music that they already have, or especially with all these kind of new projects that people kind of bring you into.
Yeah. They're my teachers. That's trippy. You know, when I was coming into middle age, I was thinking about that a lot. And then I decided it's okay. You have to just let go of these the situations we're raised with. The school and education is strange.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost more of a pounding us into kind of subjects instead of like celebrating this idea of learning.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You can't let go of that.
Yeah. As an educator, you know, I have those kind of tensions between, you know, what I have to teach in terms of the material, like, you know, they have certain classes and you know, this is what I'm supposed to teach, and also what I feel like I need to teach. And that's one of those things, and students talk about it quite a lot, especially that jump from college to high school, but even increasingly in college, it seems like this is happening where the ability to critically think, regardless what the subject is, it just isn't something that's being taught, and it's not something that's really being fostered, and quite a lot's lost. And that also explains quite a lot why so many different youth in this country, so many people in general, get very disillusioned with education.
Yeah.
Because in some ways it's not education at all.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder, both my sisters are educators.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I wonder, babysitting? No. I wish I could... You know, I got a degree in something that, you know, electronics, something I don't even use, but I still think those skills to get that board helped me in this stuff, too. Part of it was a lot of negative. I had to hide all this music stuff from the campus and the people I knew. Yeah, because punk was such a looked-down-on thing in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really refreshing that people don't care about that anymore. For a long time, you had to hide this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I remember telling my pop, you know, man, we're going to be able to write our own songs and play. Yeah. It was like, yeah. What's it really about, though? That's what it's really about, pop. Ah. No, but later on when he finally saw me play once, and I think he understood more. But these kind of skills, especially the expression ones, they're hard to put in a handbook. But I think that's the way about a lot of life. There's no real handbook. So you have to, there is a lot of improvising. So you need these skills.
Yeah.
You need to know, cats who maybe not even been around longer, but they're in a different situation. They can give you a perspective that'll help you. But if there's no, I don't know, culture of like, hey, check that out, being curious. Michael, you say I am the way I am because of curiosity. I would agree with you. And that ain't such a bad thing.
No.
So somehow that must have, like, got into me. Got into D. Boone. I know he liked reading history books. And I don't know what got him into that. But just still, the idea of you want to find out stuff. I think if any of the teachers we had, that getting that through to us, that's what helped make us what we were. I think there is something about being curious. You know? My skateboarder thinks that too, you know, when he's going to try out a move.
Yeah.
I wonder what will happen if I do this. Break my neck. But, you know... Trying to do the same thing with notes and rhythms.
Well, just got to take a quick break here at the top of the hour. Let you know you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org. Currently listening to Melting Pot, and your host, Michael Barnes. I'm here in the studio with Mike Watt, and he's going to be with us here in the second hour as well. We're going to continue talking and telling some stories and also playing some tunes. Watt brought some music with him as well. So we'll kind of do like the Watt from Pedro from KPFK along those lines after a couple quick messages here, and then we'll be back with you.
I'm Beto Arcos inviting you to join Maggie LaPique as she celebrates 20 years at KPFK with a holiday concert featuring special guest Stanley Clark. The event is Saturday, December 20th at the Catalina Bar and Grill on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. Your hosts for the evening are Richard Montoya of Culture Clash and music director Oscar Hernandez of the Spanish Harlem Orchestra. Joining Oscar and Richard will be a fantastic lineup of artists including legendary bassist Stanley Clark, Luis Conte, Justo Almario, The Hayden Triplets, Jimmy Dore, and many more amazing artists. Join us for KPFK's holiday concert at the Catalina Bar and Grill in Hollywood, Saturday, December 20th. Show starts at 8 p.m. with a VIP reception starting at 6. Get your early bird tickets now at kpfk.org.
Hi, this is Lila Downs. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, globally on kpfk.org.
Si porque te quiero, quieres llorona que yo.
This is radio powered by the people, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, worldwide at kpfk.org. You're currently listening to Melting Pot here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. My name is Michael Barnes, and I'm your host for this program. And on today's show, we have a guest here in our studios, Mike Watt, of many, many, many different projects, including the Minuteman and Firehose, and more recently with the Stooges, and also a project we've been talking about earlier in the program, a kind of trio of improvisational music called Il Sogno del Marinaio. And here I was hoping we could also you brought some music in, and I was wondering if there were some particular things that you wanted to play.
Well, some of this stuff comes from my background, so I want to hear maybe the Oyster Cult or T-Rex or
That's cool.
or Wire or Pop Group. I heard the Pop Group are going to play here in March.
Oh, really?
They never came. You know, in those old days, we only knew them by their records. And they're going to play here 35 years later. Can you believe that? I think the Echo Plex.
Oh, wow.
In March, yeah. So that's what I did. I picked some tunes from my stuff. That kind of had a big effect on me. Rocky Erickson. I'm going to get to do all of the Funkadelic Maggot Brain album with... Eric McFadden at the end of January at the Viper Room. He asked me. I said, yeah.
Really?
I said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, I know all them tunes. I played them a bunch. I've played a couple of them in front of people, but I haven't done the whole album, so that's something to look forward to. I get to that. I think I put that tune on there. And, I think Eric's got some kind of residency.
Okay. Is it like every Maggot Brain tribute, or...
I said, let's do the whole... He said, well, why don't you come over and jam? And I remember I recorded with him a trippy version of Super Stupid.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, I'll come... You know, I'm doing every Wednesday at the Viper Room in January. So I said, okay, I'll come there, but let's a little focus. Like, let's do all of... Maggot Brain, you know, you be Yeti Hazel. I'll be Billy Bass. I'll be Mike Watt, but I'll be doing Billy Bass.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in the, wow, you could hear that. That's scratching the coat, people, sorry. And so that's going to come up. You know, Raymond Pettibone first played me John Coltrane. You know, these people I met in the early punk scene, like Raymond, you know, turned me on. I found out there was a lot of similarities of the... I mean, musically, maybe a little more sophisticated with the bebop guys, but seemed like they were into doing collaborations every shot they got.
Oh, yeah, very much.
So I think maybe we got some of that tradition going for what we got. So that's why I gave you in musics.
Okay, why don't we start off with that John Coltrane that you put on here?
All right,
especially since you talked about it a couple times, and just mentioned it as well. So this is music selected by Mike Watt, and the music itself from John Coltrane here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot. Thank you.
love understand the wind at all was like a ball of love. I could never, never see the cosmic sea was like a bumblebee. And when I'm sad, I slide. I had never, never kissed a car before. Like a dog. I have always, always grown my own before. Oh, schools are strange.
Can you get And your loving days are done. A check you signed with the loving kiss of later come back. Shine insufficient fun, y'all get to that.
Can you get to that?
I wanna know.
I wanna know if you can get to that.
Music from Funkadelic here on KPFK and Melting Pot. Can you get to that? The name of the song. All the tracks in that set chosen by Mike Watt, brought in just for today's show. You talked a little bit about that funk, and we were talking. I almost feel like I should leave the mics on while the music's playing, just that, you know, have it in the background just so you guys can hear the conversations that we get to have when the music is playing. But why'd you think about bringing in that Funkadelic, other than the possibility of playing this Maggot Brain show that's coming up next year?
Oh, yeah, with Eric. No, I brought it in because this band had a huge influence on me. And, you know, the bass guitar, you could hear in an R&B. Okay. Over across the water, Jack Bruce, John Entwistle. Yeah, it seems like over there they weren't afraid. But over here they were keeping the bass pretty muddy in the rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But not in R&B. Bass was up strong. And George Clinton seemed like, man, he was balls out about just trying whatever he wanted to do. You know, like right here, you're free your ass, your mind.
Yeah.
Your mind will follow. You know, me and Deep Boom, we were in a weird place growing up as boys in the 60s, where people are taking things in their hands, like the civil right and the war, and a lot of things, even the music racket, you know, and acting on it. But by the time we come of age in the 70s, a lot of people just gave up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were, kind of disappointed. But I think this is what drove us harder. Maybe it was a good thing in the long run, because drove us into the punk movement and then trying to get our own thing together. But Funkadelic and Jimmy, I mean, this was rock and roll. This was like Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but it was starting to change. It wasn't, yeah. And it freaked me out. And when I met these people at the punk gigs, they were on that same wavelength that I wasn't getting from other people who were kind of like liking it, getting all separated and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, no, that's too neat. We need it messy. We need it mixed up. Funkadelics. Remember, too, I grew up in Navy housing. You know, I don't grow up like the average guy. Average sailor son, but. Yeah. So I didn't, you know, we were separated by rank.
Yeah.
We're not separated by people. So that, it always weirded me out. You know, when you're little, you think the whole world is the way you're growing up. So when, you know, the rude awakening comes, it's like, what? Like, hardly anybody lives this way. You know? And it freaked me out. First I thought civilians were all millionaires, you know, because they had their own path. But then I saw the way they lived, all separate like that. And the same thing was coming down with the music. It wasn't that way when I was a boy. It wasn't that way when I was growing up. So, yeah, maybe a little sentimental, a little nostalgia just for this idea where I was learning from a whole bunch of different places what music's about. I like that. I think that has a big consequence to why I'm curious, why I don't want to just stick with the same old.
Yeah. Also in the set, we played T-Rex Slider. T-Rex. And
my first gig, D Boone's Pop took me, him and his brother Joe, and we saw this stuff, you know, and it was very freaky. There were some Hare Krishnas in front of us with sparklers, I remember. You know, D. Boone's pop, you might as well see a hayseed. I mean, this guy was way into Buck Owens. He didn't know what any of this was. But, you know, I'm going to take my sons. And that was a trip about Danny Boone and Margie Boone, D. Boone's mom and pop. They had nothing against playing music.
Yeah.
In fact, do it. Do it. You know, you won't get in trouble on the streets. You come out after school and just... Never saw it as like a way to make a living, of course, but it was I got to hand it to those people, you know, and just working people, not sophisticated. D. Boone's mom knew how to play a little guitar. His, you know, pop played the record player and the radio, but they didn't have any hang-ups with that.
Yeah.
That was a really fortunate thing, especially for me, to have that in my life. You know, Petra, right, Charlie's daughter, old friend of mine, and I've always thought of, wow, what was it like to grow up? You
know, in that
Charlie
family.
Had, yeah, you know, and well, she never heard The Who. I remember when I turned her on to that, the quick one, you know, she never heard any of that stuff. She ended up, you know, doing the whole thing a cappella, eating lunch with Pete Townsend, loves it.
Yeah.
But yeah, had none of that. But then she told me, you know what, it was kind of difficult to watch. There's the other man's grass, other greener, I guess. But we were really lucky. And also with the Proj, when you're living in the Proj, materialism isn't such a big deal because there ain't anyone to go around. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember that's why we never played with a keyboard player. In those days, those cost so much. But for that shortcoming, I think there was a lot to gain by it, too. What about, I hear in education there's this thing called, it was called SEAL, and now it's going to be SEER?
Hmm.
No, SEL, and now it's going to be SEAL. So they want to put the arts back in.
Okay, yeah. Long overdue.
Yeah. I mean.
Though this is, you know, one of the things that in higher education that we're currently starting to have some issues with is this kind of idea that unless the major you have has some kind of direct use for what it is you're going to do afterwards, that it's almost like meaningless. And so you're seeing people getting away from humanities and no longer having those kind of that kind of training, though, you know, it connects back to what we were talking about earlier, how the kind of purpose of those things isn't just to have, you know, a great knowledge of English literature, but it's part of the approach to learning that's different than if you're just in hardcore economics or in mathematics or science. Like, you know, they're different approaches, and being well-rounded with all those things, you know, makes for different people. And it's certainly something when you know, in public K-12 education has been missing in the U.S.,
this one reason why Flea got that music conservatory, because he went back to Fairfax where he learned trumpet. They had gotten rid of the music program.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe it. So, okay, I'm going to do it on my own. I'm always thinking that, you know, when you're playing, when a guy does bring his kid to see you play, or he tells you about him telling his kids and this, and yeah, that I'm kind of strange way part of an education process. I feel good about that, you know, not like I'm in charge of it, you know, these cats are making use of whatever, but it's something about that, you know, maybe what's lacking in other areas, maybe we bring in like this from the side door. I wonder if you can institutionalize some of these kind of things. Man, if we could. The whole thing about aesthetics, you know. Mm-hmm. But they are important. I think this is one of the components in a curious personality.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, a lot of the different threads we were talking about certainly come together, and the track and artist we started off with, John Coltrane, from this from this just newly released thing, Live at Temple. It's more or less, I don't think it's his last concert, but it's one of his last concerts. It's fairly close to when he passed. And you heard Offering from that. And once again, all chosen by Mike Watt, who's here in the studios with us. Where should we go next?
Well, you know, when I met D. Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence. He had all six of them Creedence records, you know. And, of course, he's not using the covers, you know. They're on the hardwood deck, you know, the grape juice. You got to stick five quarters on the tone arm to keep from skipping. And, you know, his mom wants me to play bass. I can't hear any bass. But I noticed the singer. He likes these kind of shirts. You know, now I'm maybe housing, I don't know, lumberjacks or farmers. So I thought that was his kind of rock and roll shirt. So I started wearing these flannels. I thought, well, maybe D. Boone will still like me. I can't figure out what this bass guy's doing, but if I wear the singer's shirts, maybe he still like me. So I brought you this song, Effigy, which is interesting. It's, I don't know what... John Fogerty, you know, because this is the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the end of the 60s, but this period when people talked about things in songs. An intense song, Effigy. You know, and I remember as a kid, I mean, we never knew what words were for in songs. We thought they were some kind of lead guitar. But I listen back now, and it makes total sense why D. Boone liked John Fogerty's words. I mean, that guy could nail it. He could, and Effigy is like, wow. Talk about, you know, deciding what's important, you know, instead of just having, you know, beauty contests.
Mm. All right, so we're gonna hear CCR now here on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot, the song Effigy, chosen by Mike Watt here in the studio.
But G.
Music from the Buzzcocks here on KPFK and Melting Pot 90.7 FM. Song chosen by Mike Watt. Something's Gone Wrong Again. We've been having a conversation, but I do wonder why that particular song from the Buzzcocks.
Yeah, because I think rock and roll, you know, was turning into Nuremberg rallies. At that point, it had to, you know, I don't know, swallow a man pill and deal with some things, you know. Uh-huh. Just being successful and selling a lot of whatever didn't mean that the culture was that healthy. I think it was like, and I felt that in that tune that those cats did. A lot of Buzzcocks songs are, it's trippy out of Mr. Shelley. You know, a country across the sea, a different thing. But a lot of them issues resonated me. That song, Autonomy. You know, even though, you know, they've been used by bands to be very successful in a pop thing, he wrote some deep stuff. Who writes a song like Autonomy?
Yeah.
You know, why does a pop guy have to write a song like that?
Yeah.
Well, because he had to. And I'm glad he did. Or, Noise the Noise. Before that was pop group, Forces of Oppression. Kind of the same thing, you know? The same, okay, yeah, it's a little heavier on the bass and the drums, but to me it's the same. What are we going to do? What is to be done, you know? No self-satisfied smirk, but, you know, roll up the sleeves and let's get to it. You were talking about Joe Hill. You know, he spent some time in Pedro.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen his songs, but, yeah, he wrote songs. And there was something about putting the information in a song that we're talking about a gig off the air, people. I did a benefit for puppets that got destroyed to get more money up to build more puppets. And I was asking Michael here, why would the police be so afraid? And he made a great point saying a young person can understand a puppet. And so the authoritarian, that's why they want to bring down the boot. God, I'd never realized that. And that was like 12 years ago. Thank you. I'm a slow learner. I'm a slow learner.
Yeah, that whole set was a really, really forceful and very kind of poignant, especially for all that's going on right now, you know, including with the Creedence starting things off with Effigy.
Right.
You know, three, you know, pop group and Buzzcocks sort of in the same family, but still really different sounds.
Yeah.
Three different groups and kind of looking at things in three different ways, though, making comments about kind of similar issues in society.
Yeah.
You know, really, really interesting. Kind of dynamic there in the sets.
Yeah, making a stand against forces of oppression. Who is Boynton? You know, Fogerty liked, obviously, Howlin' Wolf, so this is Boynton. Age is burning.
<It's> Boynton.
And, but, you know, who? And something's gone wrong. They're asking questions. I know people here going through their minds. Even if there might be in some denial, especially to friends and or peers. I know. It's funny. I mentioned that because I remember seeing some really horrible kind of political advertisement for an election.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it had all these refugees, and then this guy translated in another language. It said, he does what we think. That's really scary.
Yeah,
I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah,
we don't need a guy who puts in, you know, into action what we're all really thinking.
Yeah,
that's disgusting. What I was thinking of was more of like Emma Goldman thing, where your own consciousness gets a spark of expression. Not that you have a better solution, but you know there's something that's got to be, you got to be part of.
Yeah.
And not getting some guy to take on the straw man. Yeah, that's really dangerous. So these guys aren't speaking for us in the songs. It's just a little, I think a resonance about being kind of skeptical.
Yeah.
About stuff that, you know, they've drilled into our heads so many ways how things should be done. But still all these problems. But they won't address that. The problem, you know, I don't know, the... When I hear a lot of blame on, well, you aren't like those cats from the old days. Of course, they don't really tell you the story of the old days. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank God we got the songs. And, you know, these things, when I was a younger man and first hearing this stuff, and I'm doing my work and going through my day, and they built up good rhythms in me, good motivator for me to search out people, and I want to say still in the expression realm, because it seems just to offer up an opinion for the sake of an opinion. That stuff reminds me of CB radio and people hiding behind handles and, you know what I mean, just going off. So mm-hmm. I'm not advocating something like that. But this thing about artists, for example, Walt Whitman, right? Leaves of Grass. He's going to write these 12 poems to try to stop the Civil War. Huh. I mean,
yeah.
I'm into that. I'm into it. He doesn't really give you exact instructions, but there's some steps in there if we would have taken, maybe, you know, like, you know, I contradict myself, so I contradict myself. I am vast. I contain multitudes.
Yeah.
And so this is why I think some of this stuff spoke to me, even though me and D. Boone had no idea what lyrics were about. I think as we start thinking about that same time is coming in on this punk movement. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
And so maybe the ways about talking about things. Because that stuff in the 60s, it was more of a something going on. We were little kids, so, but we knew something was up. Oh, every time my pop had to go on another tour, you know, he did tours too.
Yeah.
But they were to push the boat close enough so they could drop the bombs.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, finding out about it, you know, right? The only thing new is you finding out about it.
Yeah.
No truer words were ever said. But then the way you act on that, too, you react to it. And the way it stays healthy, I think, is we keep it a work in progress. Get skeptical about it in order to, like, motivate, but not get it all figured out, not get in a place where nobody has anything to teach you.
Yeah. So in some ways, you know, in you saying that and also, you know, thinking about the music that you create, not just that curiosity, but also kind of a skepticism seems to be a part of it, because that kind of keeps pushing you, like, you haven't figured it all out. And so it keeps pushing you to try and figure it all out. It's like you have this body of work that most people looking at it would say, you know, Mike Watt has really figured it out. Look at all these records. Listen to all this music. But that curiosity about trying to find something new, but also, you know, that not resting on things would seem to also connect to that, you know, skepticism in some ways, you know, like, this isn't the only way of doing these things. There has to be other ways. I haven't quite figured it out. I need to kind of stay at it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there's one thing I know. It's how much I don't know. And, you know, no problem in my 20s, right? I knew everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah.
But these, it's good to look back on the old tunes. I haven't done this for a while, Michael. It's really neat to think about. Yeah, these songs aren't a passing for me. It's not like, oh, that was, right, there's this thing, oh, your guilty pleasures, what's the embarrassing things. Yeah, I'm not embarrassed to like this. I don't think it's the best, you know. There's still good stuff being put out, but I understand how it bore some kind of witness on me, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more like a toolbox. It wasn't, you know, this is how it's done, but if there's stuff in here you might want to get your hands on and try out, see what fits you best, and you and your ensemble,
mm-hmm.
your crew, your team. Because that, too, I gotta say, man, sometimes my people skills, they're only as good as, like, cats in music. You know, thank God I got this kind of, you know, little ambassador thing, a little bridge, little tunnel, little, I don't know. It helps me connect.
Well, we're sort of getting close to the end of the show. We don't have too much time here. I think probably I'll close up with another song from this most recent project from you, Il Sogno di Marinario. But if we could get a sense of other things that are going on. Actually, did you bring a track from that new project? I think you called it was Cuz.
Cuz.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do in March and in April, do a tour in England. That's Sam. Yeah, I think it's called France Gnarl.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe we'll close up on both of those things. So this Cuz, and there's going to be a actual release for this?
It came out.
Oh, it just came out.
A couple months ago.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Tama Tabaco, which means magic box. And it's so trippy, you know. Ever since seeing T-Rex, you know, I wanted to always make a record in England with an England guy. It finally happened with good old Sam. And Cuz, you know, it's a short abbreviation of the word because.
Hmm.
You know, why does a dog, you know, because he can. Mm-hmm. And the same thing. Why did I make that record? Because I could. The opportunity was there. Brother Sam wanted to let me come over there and just jam with him, and then he would take the little jams and make tunes out of them. It was an approach I'd never been even near
mm-hmm.
before. This idea of the samples, I guess that's part of this modern thing.
Yeah.
So what I suggested was, why don't we be our own samples? So I just jammed with him for hours, and he plucked little things and made tunes out of these.
Huh.
And had me fly over some stuff from Pedro, some spiel, bass solo. Yeah, there's lots of ways to make music. There's lots of ways to paint pictures, to write books, write poems. By the way, that Leaves of Grass was DIY. You know, he had to put that out himself.
That's true.
So when we talk about the old traditional things, why doesn't that ever get brought up? You know?
Yeah.
160 years ago.
It's very punk rock back then.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing new.
Yeah.
You finding out about it.
Very true.
Yeah. John Lennon, right, he said there's no problems, only solutions. But, man, the solutions do require elbow grease, not just lip service.
Very much so.
So I'm glad there's cats who want to get filthy in music with me. All my collaborators.
Yeah.
Because what's glue without anything to stick to? Just a puddle, man. I don't want it to be just a puddle, Michael.
Yeah, just a sticky puddle.
A sticky puddle.
So, yeah, thank you. Again, thank you so much for coming in and sharing the stories. And again, you know, I feel this is one of those times where kind of the way we do things here in radio, it really kind of cheats you listeners in some ways that you couldn't be here to have all the stories that we were able to tell when we were off the air as well. I kind of wish I'd figured out some way or thought about it and recorded those too. But because they were just really fantastic. It really is it was an honor to have you earlier in the year, and it's doubly an honor to have you here live in the studio with us and share these stories and share all these songs. And again, I just can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Michael. Big time.
Okay, so we're going to close out with one last track. And again, this is from Mike Watt, one of his more recent projects. This group called Cuz. Who's the other artist that you're with right here?
Sam Duke.
Sam Duke and Mike Watt together. And this show ought to be archived on the KPFK website. It'll be archived on our website, meltingpotblog.com, a little later on in the week. And big thanks to all of you listening, and especially all of you who support this station, KPFK. You know, we wouldn't be able to have the kind of program that we just had and the kind of conversations that we just had on too many stations in the country, certainly. And the fact that we're able to is all because of the people out there who make this radio station possible. And so especially thank all of you who give us the freedom to do this kind of programming. And and once again, thank you so much, Mike Watt, coming in.
Michael, thanks. Respect to KPFK.
All right, this is the last song I got for you from Mike Watt and his group Cuz. Folk Scene's up next. I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Santana from Truth Seekers is going to be here on the show next week, but I'll see you when I see you. Y'all take care. We'll be right back.